here with me, celebrating a little music. We love to do these things, we love to have that fun. We love to do these things on WEFT. Who knows, this could be the new jingle for WEFT.
I repeat that.
Who knows, this could be new jingle for WEFT.
Straight freestyle.
WEFT.
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 WEFT. WEFT.
WEFT.
WEFT. WEFT. WEFT.
Monkey Prairie Monk, WEFT Champagne, 90.1 on your FM dial. And it's a busy period. We're facing some building problems, but we can work with those too. So it's, I want to talk this week about how you have some sort of base for your non-profit activities. It's rather frustrating for people to come to your natural area and see a little sign that says, this is owned by the natural area, but it doesn't have a telephone number or it doesn't have an email address. So it can get quite frustrating. But in the not-for-profits that are doing in natural history, are faced with that sort of thing. It's also a problem if you want to put up a small garage or building to house tools and the like. It gets the landscape so you don't have the same ambience. And it also is likely to be vandalized. And so, but over and over, organizations that have a headquarters, whether it be in a house or a barn or and more fancy buildings, it's rather important. That's where people come to meet you, greet you, and I often work out in the street. Thursday night there was a band playing. I enjoyed that. But people came by and they know you and they talk to you. I had a musician come, Rick DeSantos. He was just walking around the territory. He had been at the Wefest in the past and as a musician brought his band. And he wouldn't mind doing it again if he was invited. So we gather a little piece of information and bring it to Weft, and he may be here with Ben. But he, we talked about a lot of other things. And in order to keep afloat, to do the things he does in music, he is an odd jobs person. And so there we are. Then just last night, I went to the front door, and there was Michelle Duanes. And we've had Michelle on the Prairie Monk several times. She's a very interesting soul. She was doing a PhD in entomology with bumblebees. Bumblebees are in sad shape. There's not enough habitat for them. And they often do a lot more pollinating than Italian bees, which are an import. So she's now has her PhD, and she's a professor at a college in Pennsylvania, near to Pittsburgh. And she was showing one of her students around, Nicholas. And Nicholas, if I'll excuse myself from saying the second name, but Nicholas came here to the U of I in the middle of the virus concern, and so he has never really seen around Champaign. And Michelle was walking him around the Champaign and talking to him about different things that she had remembered. Michelle has an interesting avocation. It is that she roller skates in a derby that is down by Savoy. And this is an all-women's team and can be fairly rugged. And she's the pollinator. That's her name in this game. And she still does some of that sort of thing. And she is a professor in Pennsylvania, but she is researching bumblebees in this area in Nevada. And one of the things she's doing is looking at the nutrition of the bumblebee, and what does it need and what habitat does it need. And she does that sort of thing very well. She now has some tattoos, which are tattoos of insects. And we now have a tattoo parlor next door to Heartland Pathways, and we interact quite a bit. Last night, the city had problems because there's a tendency for people to find a vacant lot and party after the bars close, and some of that activity is pretty rugged. So I woke up at about 3 o'clock in the morning, and there were police cars everywhere and an ambulance. And so I'm not yet sure what went on, but we're in on Market Street, which used to be a raunchy street with billiards and starting price betting and a brothel here and there, and East Central Illinois mafioso. So we're in a street that's getting gentrified. And we came and occupied a building when there were four buildings here that were empty. Most of the Sears and the Pennies had escaped to the malls, which were popular at the time. And we survived because the rent was low, and then the price for her purchase was low. We could have, but this time you have to understand that the mafioso lasted probably into the 40s. But the Grubb family came here from Decatur in the 50s, and as engravers. And they gradually occupied two sets of buildings. This whole block burned down very easily in the past when there were wooden buildings here, and especially when in the winter when they got dry because they were heated. So they were replaced by two rows of buildings backsiding onto each other with an alleyway in between. Alleyway was partially built over, but the gaming people could occupy the interior of these places, and it was that you could bring your check from working in the country to town and do a little drinking, or go to Chicago by train and come back, and you'd leave your harness to be repaired in a building nearby, and you would put your horses in a livery stable. So this was horse era. And so Market Street was one of the early streets in West Urbana, which then became Champaign. And there was a grain elevator here. There were lumber yards, and the railroad was at level with any road. And after a while, in the 20s, that got to be a nuisance because there were many trains, and trains were the main mechanism for transport. So there's probably more than 20 trains a day. And if they were long, then you had to wait for a long time. So there was a upheaval there. The trains were having problems going over moraines, which were kind of high. You had to have a pusher engine push the freight train over. And it was thought that if they took that glacial till and brought it down to Champaign, they could raise up the railroad line and put an underpass in that would allow traffic to go through even if there was a train. The underpass is not always ideal because it's in a swampy time type water table, and the in a good rain the underpass can fill with water. So not ideal, but a good response at the time. And Market Street was just parallel to Chestnut Street. And some of the buildings that are here today were part of growing up in Champaign. There was an Illinois Central railroad station that faced this new railroad. In 1923, there was an Illinois Power building built by Royer. Just across the road, there was a Willie's Night garage, which probably was built more in the 1920s and late 20s, and when Jeeps were getting to be common, and eventually Jeeps were a part of World War II. And that building has been empty for quite some time, and now is Poor Brothers Tap, and it's doing very well. Missed in my introduction that a gondola dumpster was taken out this morning, and it pleases me to know where the recyclables are going, because this dumpster was loaded with recyclables, and the driver said, you know, he would empty this dumpster on the floor, and things like pallets and plastic and other recyclables, cardboard, would be removed before the remainder was sent to Clinton for landfilling. And it's interesting to see the equipment that can lift these heavy loads. Well, this is because gentrification is occurring around. Above the poor bar, there is a construction of apartments and other buildings waiting for the same. We're in transition, and to some extent, Heartland Pathways is like a country cousin in a way, because we have used it as a warehouse to a large extent. So if you want shovels and equipment and loppers and things like that, and water to add to herbicide and for spot herbiciding and things like that, this is a friendly place to be. But we don't sort of fit the upgrade where people are coming back from the malls. The malls are empty anymore. Some of them have been totally demolished and replaced. Some of them still survive, but not very well. And Champaign also had a street mall where Neal Street was cut off and a mall was there. $1 million to put it in and $1 million to take it out because it didn't work very well. It's cold, windy, and it didn't sell things as it was hoped it would do. So we're in that sort of territory. And this last week, I got a notice on the door to say that if we didn't repair and maintain the building, that there are code violations and that we would be given some consideration, but you haven't moved and shaken the repair domain. So not unusual for people with not a lot of money to do interesting things. And so we've often been tempted to be out there saving railroad beds or prairies or soils or rivers rather than being doing things at home. Home is also interesting because people bring us recyclables that they don't really enjoy throwing out. We have a society that runs on new, and so sometimes old is not respected, and we're not used to doing that. Other countries are much better at recycling clothing and shoes and hats and everything else that we can work with. We need that sort of thing. I'm Australian in background, and one of the most popular cars was a Holden. It was a General Motors car, but it lasted for at least 10 years, I would think, probably more like 20 years, as a major car in Australia. We didn't have to have 250 million copies of different breeds and the like. We didn't have a lot of population, so that was a good answer. And it was a rough, tough car that could go over interesting terrains. So we could afford to do some more of that here. We just have too much of obsolescence. I have probably about 20 or 30 flashlights that are obsolete. Sometimes if you fiddle with them and put a battery in them, they work. But it's like functional obsolescence. But other countries think a bit differently about some of these things, and they reuse and reuse and reuse. Sometimes fashions are more likely that if you're a fashion person, you will have one or two stock fashion pieces that you wear that have a designer qualification, and it's recognized that this is your particular garment, and you don't have to have a different garment every day to go to work. So we fall into that category in the sense that people bring. So right now, we have received a notice that says, get your act together. And I want to use it as an illustration that this is not the only situation that not-for-profit corporations encounter, because they don't have much money. And so we need to tuck point the front facade, $6,000 to $8,000. We need to put in a back window, $4,000. And we need to do that while we still do our work out in the boondocks. And we're concerned about a railroad bed coming through from Bloomington to Mansfield. We have railroad bed outside Allerton Park. We have Champaign, Havana, and Western Railroad coming in from White Heath, re-railing on 4 miles of our abandoned ICG railroad bed. We're looking at things that are in the long run multinational, and they're pricey things. The 25 miles between Urbana and Danville, the Kickapoo Trail, which we had a lot to do with initiating, needs money. You know, one of the bridges that's being put up at the moment and converted into a bicycle trail is going to cost $3 million to do that conversion. So we often are in limited quarters, creating inspirations, hoping that other groups will take over or join you. And that has happened a lot, whether it be with prairie preservation or with recycling materials that otherwise go to the landfill. We've been there, and we can't complain that now that gentrification is occurring, we need to do something about this. And we have demands, and there's two ways of funding some of these things. One is that you have a special project, like if we wanted to preserve a truss bridge, then that would be a target for preservation. The other one is general funding. WEFT does both of these things. WEFT has had had to have a new antenna and adapt to that, and that's a specific task and a specific requirement for finance. But they also have regular fundraisers to cover general costs. They have been frugal. They don't have a CEO. They don't have any employed members. And they still get things done. And you have a group of people who are prepared to do that. So since we got our notice, we had quite a lot of support. People enjoy what we do. They know that we accumulate materials. Sometimes they're known as monk's junks. But and to some people, they're not valuable. To others, they're very valuable. Sometimes they're just characters. They're pieces of wood or grain exhibited by a certain cut of wood, or battery storages, or creating T-shirts that tell a story. So I was showing someone around WEFT the other day, and Scott Dorsett had a T-shirt on, which was a Heartland Pathways T-shirt with purple cornflower on the front and big blue stem on the back. And that it was interesting to people who were from the Park District, and Bill Saylor's brother and his children. So it's talking. And one of the things you need to do in this sort of community development stuff is to talk to each other. And it may be that day we had a friend, Harold Scott, and Harold Scott was just loaded with information. He was slow speaking, and he would have a halt in his speech. It's almost to the point that you wanted to fill in the gap. But if you wait, you get all sorts of information. And that helps put together natural areas, historic buildings, and you get to know the city people. You can stand up in the front of the city and say, this railroad bed is coming through from Bloomington. You ought to know about it. It's way, way out of your jurisdiction. But your people in your jurisdiction are going out to these places to use these places in Piatt County, McLean County, DeWitt County, Vermillion County. These are all places that have interesting terrains and lakes like Lake Clinton. And we're dependent on them. And we need regional planning and in East Central Illinois, so we don't lose a 30-mile railroad bed loaded with prairie and going to be replaced with corn and soybeans. That doesn't register in some circles. It registers if you're going to benefit from a few more rows of corn and soybeans. But if you're going to need a perennial bean, soybean, in the future to reduce erosion because you don't have to plant it each year, then some of the attributes of prairie, you need a plant, you might need a legume that's growing well, you may need to modify it, you may need to add rhizobacteria to the roots. So we really need those places. But right now, the building is in jeopardy because we have not paid enough attention to it. So we have to empty out some of the things that are fire hazards. One of the things is we do silkscreen printing. We had to stop doing silkscreen printing because the Grubb family I forgot what I was going to say. The phone rang. But much of our building goes back to 1950s, 60s. So the wiring is not so good. Some of it is demand wiring, which is very healthy. We have one press upstairs, which is weighs 55 pounds, so 55,000 pounds. So if you're underneath it and you're in a fire and it falls down, you're a flat cat. So the fire department knows this is there. We would like to think about or dream about perhaps having a visual unit in downtown which does something like what Urbana Public Television does. At the moment, it has to come. It offers Champagne not-for-profits the opportunity to be on the air. But we would, and Champagne has that capacity, but doesn't do it. It's a different cat, and so we're thinking that there might be a place for an elevator, so artists could work upstairs with the press. It would cost about $10,000 to take the press out and put it on a semi-trailer, a lowboy, and then you've got to figure out where you're going to go with it. It's not very accessible because it's on a certain floor, but if you had an elevator, people could go up to it. And so we're dreaming. And if we're going to dream and keep the building, we have to pay attention to the building. And it's not what you do, but what is safe. And We picked the building because it has sprinklers, and the sprinklers have been checked recently. We stopped silk screening because the spider that provided the heat from Walnut Street was replaced by individual heaters in each building. So there's various things we have to think about. And as you do this, there's the yin and the yang. The essence is we want to do prairie preservation. So it can't be destroyed by the chaff that's around it. So we have to work at it. And this morning, Meg Miller took out a truckload of materials that could go to the forest preserve. Some of them were quilts that were aged and related to Williamsville in near to Springfield, near to Riverton, where Mary Hussey grew up, and she was an interesting person. So there's provenance there, and so it often helps museum people to be to have a storyline that goes with what you give them. And we've dealt with this sort of storyline in Prairie Monk, but then we're deficient in a way because we don't always label our discussions. If we have several items to discuss, we may not have listed them all. If you were working with the Urbana Free Library, you need to have a summary so people don't have to listen to 50 minutes of junk before they get the message that they want to get. So it would be very helpful to have more computerized people who can take paper chase and convert it into computer language. And David Witzani has been here. He has been the radio engineer for this program for probably at least 5 or 6 years. And he's helped us to put in pictures and to do things with Dropbox and to learn our way around the Macintosh and PC computers. David is sort of on retreat at the moment because he's been careful about viruses, and he would be prepared to be at home at the moment, which is quite okay. But we could use the help of people who could look at old electric programs. If you're going to go for a grant, it's very helpful for the grant people to know how much you're already spending on gas or electricity or sanitary, or you have to establish who you are and what you are. So we need to take those old documents and get a rough estimate of what we're spending and how that can convert into a request for a grant. And we're doing some of that sort of work right now. You have to ask questions about where the grant money comes from, and sometimes in Illinois, it is coming from a Clean Energy Foundation, which is a spin-off from the energy producers like Commonwealth Edison. And you have to wonder if you're using grant money that is also herbiciding your prairie. So you have to figure out whether you want to be a part of that picture and how you fit into it. So now we have to think about fundraising. Yeah, a Kickstart could do this. We also have other interests. We have the possibility of a 5-acre plot next to our prairie at the Rantoul, which would be very inviting because it would be rough and tough and the sort of thing that public could use, whereas the more delicate prairie that we've been saving, part garden and part remnant, would do its own thing without a lot of traffic. There's a possibility that we could ask for general support, and but then we have to be careful because we're operating with WEFT and we're on WEFT airwaves, and WEFT needs money to do their things. So we can say that we're in fundraising mode, but we can't actually advertise ourselves on WEFT. That's not part of the FCC regulations. So we have to be dignified and proper in how we go about asking for money on somebody else's airwaves. We have used Facebook before and got surprising responses. So we think that could happen. The people who do brewery things seem to get money from Facebook and other organizations like it to establish a brewery and to distribute the product. So we're hoping, and we're thinking about doing that. That means we have to have computer language. Part of it is that you have to have stored your computer information so that you can retrieve it. And that's where we need people who can do that sort of conversion. Make sure that you name your program. If it has several different topics, then you have to list the several different topics, have it, and make a summary. And that takes time. So we also, in the long run, have to have a CEO or someone who knows a lot about everything. And those sorts of people are in short supply. It takes a lot of talent, and especially you're wanting someone who has to get up and go to do it, and to smile brightly and to explain what you want and be vocal about it. The Grand Prairie Friends has a very helpful Sarah Livesey, and she is a wonderkin at getting things together. She's also president of Forest Preserve. And we look for that sort of person. Sometimes there's such a shortage that organizations are beginning to grow their own. That means that you invite people to come and work on a project. It might be about part of 100 people, but you might be tickled by one aspect of what is happening. Then, so you have to think about who you are and what you might want to do. And if it comes up that you'd like to do something interesting, you've seen some examples. You've seen an orchid or something that inspires you. Then the next step is to find out what the organization that you're interested in is interested in doing. Once you get that far, the next step is for the organization to tell you what they want to do, what are their objectives, is there an overall planning? Can you create a plan that would change every 5 years or change with different generations or change with the climate? I just was looking at boots this morning, and some of those boots should go to Canada because there will no longer useful in East Central Illinois. They're just too hot. So you have to think about time and the future, and you have to have skeletons so that people can do their own thing with that skeleton. And you need to meet people and talk to people and discuss possibilities. So I've been talking to Al Fredericks, and he has ideas about what we should do. We should get rid of all that cardboard. Well, we have silk screens, and we have lots of silk screens, and the cardboard backs the silk screens. And we don't have the money to go out and buy archival styrofoam that is often used by museums and artists. So cardboard is a difficulty. If you put it in a place where there's humidity, then it's going to not feel nice on a print. You can print in the open, but you also have to know that if you get an ant in your print, you make a streak across your printer, and that print is out of wax action, and you then have to go fishing for the ant to get it out of your ink so it doesn't appear again. So what can we do? Can we put some of our cardboard in lockers and store them? Or do we just get rid of all the cardboard and get to be straight-laced and more fitting in the community? One of the big problems is that we have been using the building as a warehouse. So you walk in the front door and there's a set of shelves that are loaded with screws and bits and pieces that we need, and then all the shovels and the loppers and saws are sitting right there. And that's not very exciting in a downtown which is deciding to be commercial. So one of the things we have to do is to remove those materials either to the basement or to a warehouse like at Bonneville, so that they're not right on top of the visiting society. And we do have visitors. By the June the 2nd, I think it is, we will have music back in Market Street. And then you have to think about those people who sit upon a stoop and enjoy looking into our antique front window while other people don't appreciate it at all. So we want to maintain something for the art outside of things in downtown. We need to combine it with science and combine it with education. So as we look at the future, we look at how we might use this building and how it might work well with WEFT next door. WEFT is radio, and it has a quality of its own, and it's very important with music, and you listen. And but in many places, pictures are worth 1,000 words, and so can we establish an organization that would promote the pictorial side of things, so that we folk, little folk, can get on the internet and work with pictures and produce a film. And that's rather a wonderful thing to do. While we're dreaming, we still have to be out there in the field. It's getting to be June. The prairie is starting to express itself. We have some pots outside the front door, and that have daisy fleabane, which is sort of a regrowth succession weed. It's doing very well, and I think it deserves to be stayed. We have some pansies and other things. But it reminds you that the prairie is out there growing. It's lush. It has biodiversity, and it's our heritage. If you're planting trees these days, you have to realize that you're actually planting trees in prairie soil. There's very little prairie soil left. And just a spoonful of prairie soil is loaded with microorganisms and interactions. And so we need to think about who might take over some of our railroad beds, for instance. I've been talking to Grand Prairie Friends and wondering if they might be able to extend from Rantoul to Paxton, if they would be advocates for 10 miles between St. Joe and Oakwood, so that the trail would not be so wide that it would destroy that prairie soil and prairie plants that are in it. So there's a debate amongst ourselves as to what is good for the future. Preservation of forests is popular because trees are more interesting than prairies, which look like weeds, but our genetics is in there, that rattlesnake master may have a biochemical we don't know about now, but if we want it in 500 years time and it's not there, we're not going to have that biochemical or its pathways or its knowledge. And we don't have a lot of money for fundamental research, which means that you go to a specific plant and a specific part of the plant and find out all about it and spend your whole life doing that. But somebody has to pay for that, and it's much more prominent that research that is paid for is research that is rewarding in that some product might be sold or bring in economic value. So we have to think about working out there in the field, and at the moment we're inclined to be inside because the virus is still around, but there are places where we really need to be. On South 45, I see teasel growing on the prairie that's along Route 45 in Savoy, South Savoy. Somehow we need to get together people who can go out and either slash that to remove the fruiting bodies, or better yet, to slash it and apply herbicide to the plant so that it doesn't spread. It's a very noxious weed, and every once in a while I'll stop my car on the corridor there and get out with a machete and take out some plants. So it needs coordination, it needs that CEO, it needs the committees that are underneath it. And I've been pleased to watch Grand Prairie Friends and others bring together committees like that when they think there's a deficiency, like there's a difficulty that most of our natural history organizations don't involve minority groups. How do you encourage that? How do you actually put together a new CEO? Is another one. So I've been watching the PACA, Preservation and Conservation Association, and they've gone through some iterations, and I haven't been fortunate enough to have them on to tell us so, but they've lined up their corridors of materials, old windows, old doors, old sashes, and have them speak to the value of working with old buildings. They're trying to keep it to buildings that are older than the 1950s. And not too much modern stuff. There's a question of whether they are historians. So we have a glyph. And the glyph is a part of an Oddfellows building. It was in its day a part of the structural uplift or the support of the building. The building was taken down to provide space for the Bank of Illinois, which was opposite the city building. I watched the glyph get covered with soil and gradually lifted the bricks away and protected this glyph. It has an eye of God looking over a crook in a sword. And it has a tent with a flap open and you're welcome in. And there's a faggot of various things, usually sticks, that remind you that you need to behave yourself. There's a certain moral code. So if you have a faggot put upon your door, it might mean that you have been misbehaving with your family. You might be drinking too much, or and the Oddfellows, which would have that glyph, would have members of the, would take it upon themselves to remind you that you need to straighten out. Some of those organizations became the insurance company. So the Modern Woodsman of America did that. So now, where we eventually got a backhoe, and we got people, and we had about seven people to lift that litch, that totem pole around to us, and it's sitting and waiting. If you were to cut up the pieces and send them to New York and sell them, they would sell for a fantastic amount of money. But this glyph, it deserves to stay in town. Where would it go? Does it go to Packer? Is Packer going to be part of a historic museum? Perhaps no. So there's the debate. We have had a historic museum on University Avenue, but that lost out. And museums are losing out all over. They just can't, they don't have the money to keep things going. And so what you have is little pieces of museums all around the place where some sort of pencil is, has a pencil museum, or the horseshoe museum, or they're there and they last for a little while and then die because they don't have a family that keeps them going, or they don't have the money. But we value these places, these sites that are revered by people, especially young people who haven't ridden a train. So you have a historic railroad museum that provides you with that opportunity. It's a novelty, it's a niche, it's a, but it gives you an experience, a first-time experience for a child. And it's there, and volunteers enjoy keeping it up and doing it. So is so do you handle knickknacks also? That's a good question. Little ideas? Yes. We had a box of Lionel railroad pieces, and so we don't have the capacity to sell Lionel Railroad pieces. But I took them to the Railroad Museum, to the Packer, and Packer had just been donated Lionel engines and cars, and the very thing they needed was railroad to put them on. And you don't know about these things until you move around and talk to each other and find out that there are people out there quite willing to put this together and give young folk the opportunity to go into the future with some few of the elements that their grandparents had or their great-grandparents had. And Packer has the elements of that. So do we get seven people to lift out the glitch out the front door and take it to Packer? I don't know. It's too tall to be in a place with a drop ceiling or a low ceiling. It should be outside. That's where it was. It's vulnerable. If you percuss it, hit it with a hammer, it will break. But it's strong. It's strong to keep up a building in its day. So these are the sort of things we think about. And as we do think, we think it's worthwhile. And we'll be out there with fundraising in the near future. We probably will start with Facebook because we have thousands of addresses. We don't know quite how to use them. There are a lot of skills of putting those addresses onto envelopes, and there's a cost of doing that. But we're working at it, and those who are interested, we're also emptying out Heartland Pathways of some of the goods that are brought to us or we have saved ourselves because they're just a little too good to be just throwing out or putting in a resale situation that is not going to look after them, like a quilt that may be very delicate. So we have a lot of those things, and we need to get rid of them so that we can fix up our paper chase and find our deeds and records for 33 mile of railroad bed. And so for those of you who are interested in this, quite a few, we'd like you to think about helping to do this and perhaps having ideas as to where certain things might go and find a place. Well, it's time. It's time to leave some room for WEF to say beautiful things about WEF. WEF is wonderful. WEF. Monday night, I listened to a Filipino person play guitar and be recorded by cameras, and Mike Feldman runs the show and records the music, but he records the video too, and Jason Willigert comes from the UPTV so that they can put it up on Channel 6 and on YouTube and that sort of thing. The people who are who know their genres and can give you the information. It's different from WILL that has a limit of the range. You don't get reggae on regular radio stations. So this is Dave Monk of Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign. Thank you for listening, and give us a little help if you feel like doing so. We'll be over tonight. No, I think tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, we'll be meeting at the Big Dig where we have a Pocket Prairie has moved to. So thank you for listening. Bye.
It's all brought to you on WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM. We are volunteer-operated, listener-supported community radio for East Central Illinois.